welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara-Papinski. This week, I'm delighted to welcome award-winning children's book author-illustrator Matt Tavares to the podcast. His picture books include Crossing Niagara, Henry Aaron's Dream, Red and Lulu, Dasher, and many more. His latest book is called Ben of All Trades, The Most Inventive Boyhood of Benjamin Franklin, written by Michael J. Rosen. I do want to mention that this episode was recorded ahead of time before the COVID-19 situation really changed dramatically. So you will hear things like Matt being out on his book tour and at a hotel, which seems like another life. This is definitely from the before times, but I'm really looking forward to sharing this conversation with you, and I hope everyone is staying safe and well. Matt Tavares, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm really excited to get to talk with you today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the book. Really enjoyed Ben of All Trades and seeing the illustrations in there. Can you tell us a little bit about this project and how it got started?
Well, Michael J. Rosen is the author of this one, and I'm the illustrator. So my editor at Candlewick, Katie Cunningham, sent me the story like a few years back now, I guess. And I was intrigued by it. It's about Benjamin Franklin, and it's a story from when he was a kid. So I guess that's the big thing that appealed to me. Just when you picture Benjamin Franklin, you think of him as an old man. So it was cool to learn about what it was like when he was a kid, and to kind of try to recreate Boston of the early 1700s.
Yeah, I love the way he's brought to life as a kid and sort of the relationship with his dad. I really like in the story how his dad's sort of frustrated with him that he won't settle down on a trade. And, you know, we know as the audience, like, he's going to be fine. But it's kind of funny to see, like, oh, yeah, he didn't know that he would go on to become this sort of legend in our history. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting. So you are... I think a lot of people aren't aware, and I know I wasn't for the longest time, that for picture books, often the author and the illustrator are not working side by side on the project or anything. So I think it's interesting that you're talking about how you read the story, and then I'm assuming you, from there, decided to work on it and work on the illustrations. Did they give you anything to sort of go off of, or are you really kind of allowed to just sort of imagine anything you want in terms of style or process or anything like that?
Oh yeah. They just, they gave me the words, and that's pretty much it. And yeah, the author and the illustrator, like, I to this day have never met Michael J. Rosen.
And, so funny.
You know, I might at some point if we do a book signing together, but, it all goes through the publisher. So I work with the editor and the art director, and, I think they kind of like to be the sort of the quarterback of the whole project. So things go through them, but yeah, I start out with the manuscript, and I start out by deciding, should it be a 32 page picture book? Should it be 40? I try out paging it out and see how the pacing works and see where the page turns fall. Then I just kind of start sketching and figuring out what I want it to look like. And then, once I kind of wrap my head around it, then I'll send sketches to the art director, and we'll talk about design and just the overall look and that stuff. But pretty much just start with words on a piece of paper.
That's very cool. And what is your artistic process like in creating the illustrations?
This book was different for me, where for my first 20 books, the final art that I delivered to my publisher was on a piece of paper, just old fashioned, real paint, real pencils on paper. This is the first book where the final art was a digital file, where I did pencil illustrations. I drew different parts of the picture in pencil, and then scanned that all in, assembled it in Photoshop, and I did all the color digitally. So it was kind of a new thing for me, which I really enjoyed.
Do you think that's how you'll continue to do it? Or...
Yeah, I mean, it'll depend on the project, but for this one, it sort of came out of necessity, where I've been working digitally for years for my sketches, for all the preliminary stuff, just because I like when I'm drawing in the computer, I can move things around. It's much more convenient when I'm planning the book. So I've kind of slowly gotten used to working that way. And for this book, I just visually had this idea. You know, I was looking at old prints. I was trying to, my original idea was to make the pictures look like they're from that era, you know, from the 1700s. And just seeing those old prints that were hand colored, where the, like you would see the black drawing, but then you'd see color that almost looked like it was underneath. And I was trying to think of how to do that. And I thought doing it digitally would actually be, I could do a lot more than if I tried to do it all on the same piece of paper, where I could have these pencil drawings. And then once I go in with the color, on a piece of paper, once you go in with the color, you can't really undo anything, where with the, on the computer, I can have a little more flexibility to try some different things. So, it's definitely something I think I will use in other books. I've already finished the book that comes out after this one, and I worked a similar way.
Oh, that's cool. Well, with Ben of All Trades, I had read somewhere in an interview that you, or maybe it was in the author's note, how you had been excited to sort of illustrate Boston at that time, and you had been picturing it a certain way in your mind, but then did some research and realized that it actually looked quite different during sort of the time of his boyhood than you thought. And I hadn't really thought before that, like, oh yeah, like you have to do a good bit of research for to illustrate a book that is historical in nature. And I was just curious about what that process was like and the kinds of things you read or looked at for your research.
Yeah. I mean, I want to try as best I can to make sure everything in the pictures is accurate. So a lot of it was, like you said, at first I imagined there's so many buildings in Boston still that were there in revolutionary times. And I thought, oh, this would be great. I'll show all these landmarks that I know. But one by one, as I looked into them, none of them had been built yet in the early 1700s when Ben Franklin was a kid. So I went to the Boston Public Library and found what I could of, you know, history books of Boston and old prints, and just trying to piece together old maps too, just like what the city looked like then. And it was totally different than what you picture as old Boston. It was mostly just a little peninsula with just one road that connected it to the mainland. And it was just surrounded by boats, which when Benjamin Franklin was a kid, that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to go off to sea and be a sailor.
And his dad didn't let him. I thought that was so interesting. And so was it his older brother that had died at sea?
Yes,
that was why
his
the
older
father
brother,
didn't.
I think at the time this story takes place, his older brother had been gone for years and they didn't know what became of him. So he never returned. So his father didn't want to lose another son to the sea.
Yeah, it's just so interesting how his place in history might not be there if his dad had let him go off to sea like he had wanted. You definitely seem to be drawn to these historical figures and these sort of like biographical picture books. Were you always a big history fan, or sort of what got you started on this aspect of kind of picture book illustration?
Really, it was when I illustrated my first nonfiction book. I illustrated a book called Lady Liberty, a biography by Doreen Rappaport. And that was the first time I had tried this sort of thing. And I found that it was, I mean, on one hand, it was the hardest book I had ever worked on, because the research kind of entered, you know, there was this whole other element to it where instead of just painting and being in my own little world, suddenly I had to make sure every tiny detail in the picture was historically accurate, which kind of took me a while to get in the groove with that. But I found by the end of that project that I really loved doing that book. And, you know, the research and the trying to incorporate the history into it and trying to kind of bring these stories to life was something I really loved. So I started kind of exploring my own, you know, what kind of topics I would want to write about myself. And then I've ended up, you know, Candlewick has sent me some other stories know, nonfiction stories from history that I've enjoyed doing. So definitely something I kind of got into for a while. I was mostly just doing nonfiction books. Lately, I've kind of been going back and forth.
Yeah, that's great. The librarian in me just thinks like, oh, that sounds like nerdy heaven to be like researching and then going to the text and the illustration. And that sounds
really
fun.
I feel like with my nonfiction books, it's like I have almost all the different subjects you do in school. You know, there's art, there's writing, there's history, social studies. It's like a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you mentioned your fiction too. And I had actually, I had met you at a book signing for Dasher at Silver Unicorn Books in Acton, which is a great independent bookstore. And that book, so Dasher and Red and Lulu are both Christmas picture books. That we have read many, many times in my family. I do a book advent calendar, and we've put both of those in there. And it was fun with Dasher. I was there at the bookstore with relatives, and they were giving the book as gifts too. And it sort of like spread throughout the family, which is really fun. Everyone was reading it at Christmas time. But then I was looking to see to buy more copies, and it was sold out online. And I was just, I was sad for me, but excited for you that it was just such a big bestseller and was selling everywhere. That must have been really exciting.
It was. That doesn't happen for every book, so I definitely appreciate it when that happens. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah, were you surprised that took off like it did?
I guess I was a little surprised. I mean, I knew Candlewick was really doing a lot to promote it, and I know they had really high hopes, but until it happens, you never know. You know, that was my 20th book, and I had never had that happen quite to that extent before. So, you know, as some of the stuff was happening, it was still unexpected. You know, you don't take anything for granted. There's a lot of things, like there's been a lot of times in my career where something maybe is going to happen that's really exciting, and then it doesn't quite happen. So I never want to get too excited about stuff until it happens. But yeah, there was some amazing stuff. You know, making the New York Times bestseller list for the first time was something I had kind of hoped for a long time. So that was very nice.
That's very great. Gratifying. Congratulations on all that. Are there more like holiday or Christmassy picture books in the works, or do you think that'll be it on that for a little while?
Yeah, I've played around with trying to come up with a sequel for Dasher. I don't think I've come up with one yet that I really am in love with, but hopefully that might happen at some point. And I do. I just signed on to do a picture book that I wrote. It's sort of a New Year's Day book.
It's kind of
just about starting the new year and all the possibilities. So sort of a holiday book, a little different.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I feel like there aren't tons of New Year picture books. That's something that would be really fun.
Are. And I feel like that's this time of year where you kind of take stock of where you are and what's ahead. And so I kind of liked that idea for a picture book.
I love that. And I feel like, so I was a school librarian for a long time, and I feel like that's also, even in classrooms, sort of a really nice time to come back together, like as school communities and everything. I feel like I was always looking for a good read aloud for that time of year. So that's fun.
Well, hopefully this can be that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm always really fascinated by creative routines, and I would love to hear kind of what a typical day is like for you as a writer and an illustrator.
Most days I work a pretty normal work schedule. Like once my wife and kids are off to school in the morning, I head into my studio. I work at home, so it's nice and easy. I just head right in there. And so usually from like 7:30 till 5 or 5:30 or whenever everybody's home and we're having dinner, I'll just work straight through. I'll stop for lunch. And, every now and then once everyone else is in bed, I'll do a little work in the evening too, just if I'm late in the deadline or if I'm really into something. But it's pretty normal. And then I also travel a lot. Like right now I'm in a hotel room in St. Louis because I have a week of school visits, and I brought my laptop and my Wacom tablet, and I've been working on some sketches for my current project. So there are times that I set up little studios and hotel rooms, and the story that I just mentioned, the New Year's Day one, I wrote on an airplane. It was just this idea I'd been thinking about, and kind of a rare occasion where I just blurted out a whole draft. It's a very short story. It's only 250 words or so. And I wrote that on an airplane, which is nice, productive use of my time.
Well, that actually leads me to one of my other questions for you, which was going to be, does a story where you're the author and the illustrator typically come to you first, like as an image, or like you sort of see the story visually first, or do you tend to, I mean, you're saying for this one that you kind of wrote it down first. I was just curious sort of how those ideas form.
Yeah, for me, the for the most part, the words come first, but I'm always picturing it in my head from the beginning. So it's really both. But for the most part, I'll come up with the words, and then I'll start working on sketches. And then there's always a lot of back and forth. You know, once I figure out which parts of the story are going to be told with pictures, I always go back and usually get rid of some words and change the words to match what I want to draw. But yeah, and every book is a different thing too. It's like, you know, I've done 21, 22 books now, and you'd think I would have this standard system, but you know, I think with anything creative, you know, you never know where an idea is going to come from or what path each endeavor is going to take.
Yeah. That I'm sure that keeps the projects feeling, you know, fresh and unique as well. Yep. Did you start out more writing or illustrating or both? What was sort of that journey like?
I started out doing both. My first book, Zachary's Ball, I did as my senior thesis in college when I first did it. So, I wrote and illustrated that and had this series of wonderful things that happened right after I graduated, where it was kind of this surreal time where I found an agent who liked it, and she found Candlewick Press who also liked it. And, so I got my first book published as an author illustrator, but that was really the first children's book I'd written. So at that time I didn't have this whole stockpile, and I didn't really feel like I knew what I was doing at all in terms of writing books. So, and I really just wanted to be an illustrator going into it. But once I wrote that story, I found I really did like to do both. So at that point I was kind of open to either one. You know, I was trying to write my own stories, but you know, if Candlewick had a story for me that they thought would be a good fit, I was all for doing that too. And I like doing those projects too, because I end up doing books that I never would have thought of on my own. That's sort of the type of project I'm most excited to take on. Like I did the Gingerbread Pirates. I illustrated a book by Kristen Kladstrup, and it was just this book where all my characters were cookies, and it was totally different than anything I would have thought of. So that's the thing I love about collaborating.
Yeah, it's sort of a really fun creative challenge. I didn't really think about it that way. You're sort of getting this text that you maybe never would have come up with, and then you get to kind of take the next step in the process. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Are there any picture book authors or illustrators that you particularly admire or you feel like have maybe influenced you?
Yeah, there are plenty. I think early on, Chris Van Allsburg was probably the biggest influence on me. Just seeing his books when I was in college is really one of the big driving forces behind me wanting to make books of my own. David Wiesner is another one. There are so many. But yeah, I look at a lot of picture books and gain inspiration from seeing books that I think are great.
That's great. Well, I also think a lot about sort of passing on a love of reading to kids. And as a person that sort of creates these books for a living, I'm curious how that has maybe influenced the way you approached raising readers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the biggest thing I've figured out and it seems to just be pretty obvious at this point, is if you want to raise readers, just letting them read what they want to read. It's probably the biggest thing. Just seeing my own kids, you know, with over the years, they have different teachers who have different ideas about that stuff. And like my daughter, who's in seventh grade now, has a teacher who lets them read whatever they want. And she reads more just because she's excited about the book she's reading. You know, if she's reading all graphic novels for a while, like, that's fine. If she's reading a series, that's fine. I think that's the biggest thing. And seeing my kids read, I totally agree. It's crazy. Like, it seems like that's obvious at this point, but, you still come across a lot of people who don't think that way, who think you can't read a graphic novel, that's not a real book, or, you can't just read fantasy, you have to read nonfiction, or, you know, I don't quite even get what the point is of all of that. Like,
no, and it's interesting.
So kids enjoy it.
Right, right. That's the whole point. And it's interesting. I feel like from following so many people in the children's book world on social media, to me, it seems like everyone's on board with this. Like, exactly, of course we want kids to be reading to whatever choir, they want. Right. Like, of course, you know, of course graphic novels count. And like, it's great if they're hooked on a particular series and they're like reading them, you know, over and over or whatever it is. And then I'm always shocked to see like someone post like, oh, this homework assignment came home and they're not allowed to read anything that they want to. Or, it's sort of like I'm still in this like echo chamber sometimes, but I'm like, oh no, like I can't believe that this is happening. But it does, I do feel like the word is getting out more. Like I even with New Kid winning the Newbery, I thought that was big. Like, oh, maybe
a big difference, I think.
Yeah, like maybe teachers will be paying more attention to that. And I totally agree. I feel like just embracing choice when it comes to reading, I agree, is so important. Well, I was also wondering if you have any favorite picture books that you shared with your kids that you would want to recommend, or I know you mentioned a couple of authors, picture book authors that had inspired you, but just any that you particularly enjoyed, like as a family, or might be a while back now.
Now that they're 15 and 12, we haven't read a lot of picture books lately. I mean, we've all what have we read together? Now I'm blanking.
No, that's, well, you know
we
what,
read,
too?
We read a million books with my kids as they're growing up, and now they read on their own. I kind of miss
now that. Now they're older. Well, did they think it was cool to read your books, or was it sort of like, that's not a big deal?
They started this little tradition on their own, which is the sweetest thing that I love, where on Christmas Eve, they'll get out my Christmas books, and they'll read to each other. They still do it, which is so sweet. But yeah, as they were growing up, like I never wanted to, I didn't want to like force my books on them. So there were times like, you know, they would read my books and I think they liked them for the most part. Like, but they were, you know, they always kind of were used to me being an author and weren't that, you know, it wasn't that impressive or exciting to them, I think, a lot of the time. But, you know, every now and then, like what someone at school will be reading one of my someone will take one of my books out from the library or something, and they would notice that and think it was cool.
That's fun.
But there was a time when my daughter was in kindergarten and her teacher read Oliver's Game to the class, and before she read it, she said, Molly, I think you might recognize this book. And my daughter just said, like, no, like she had never seen it before. She's like, this is by your father. She's like, oh, okay. She didn't even know. But, no.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, that's cute. It's funny that, yeah, I'm sure to them it's just the norm. Like, that's just your job. And that's really cute that they read the books on Christmas Eve.
When my kids were little, were like my daughter, like the Mercy Watson books, you know, Kate DiCamillo and Chris Van Dusen. Like, my daughter was super into the Mercy Watson books and loved them. And then Chris Van Dusen stopped by to visit one day. He lives in Maine, like we're friends. And she was like in the other room watching TV. And I was like, honey, like, you should get your Mercy Watson books. Chris can sign them. Like, Chris Van Dusen is in our kitchen. And she's like, eh, you know, it's like,
no, I'm not fazed by that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I had also seen an interview. I thought it was really cool. So you mentioned working in your studio every day, and the studio is part of the house you lived in when you grew up. Is that right? And you used to like do artwork in there too?
Yeah, it's a house that my parents bought when I was, I think, in sixth grade, and we would come up to Maine for the summer. And then, so we spent a few summers there, and then we moved to a different house, and my parents for years just rented it out as like a summer rental. And then when my wife and I got married, we moved up there and started renting from my parents and then ended up buying it. So it's a house that's kind of been in my family since I was a kid. So yeah, I remember the room that's my studio now was kind of like our sort of a family room. So I remember like coloring with crayons in there, and there are probably still some crayons hiding under the bookshelves.
That's cool. It all comes full circle.
Yeah.
Well, since you're in Maine, I was also just wondering too, are there any favorite bookstores you would recommend for people maybe like planning a summer trip to Maine, or any other like literary destinations or events that you like?
Yeah, there are some really nice independent bookstores up my way. There's one in downtown Portsmouth. There's a store I love called G. Willikers Books and Toys. And it's a really great family-owned business right in downtown. It's just, they've been there, I think, 40-something years. And they have kind of slowly turned from a toy store to a pretty much 50-50 books, children's books and toys. They do an awesome job. Where I live, I'm right by the New Hampshire border, so it's like a 15-20-minute drive to get down there. Then there's some really good ones in Portland. There's Longfellow Books. There's Print Bookstore. Yeah, Portland's a great city to visit if you're driving up through Maine.
Yeah, I love Portland. Well, I always just love to end. I like to hear what authors and illustrators are reading. Are there any books you've read lately, either kids' books or adult books, whatever you've been reading lately that you'd want to recommend?
Sure. I've been working on my first graphic novel. So I've been reading a lot of graphic novels and trying to wrap my head around how they work and how people that are good at it, how they do things. I've also been reading, you know, maybe what I'll say is I've been reading books about writing too, which has come in handy lately as I'm trying this new longer format. The book I'm currently reading, it's Save the Cat. It's a book by, I wish I could remember the guy's name right now. I can't.
That's okay. I'll link to it. I'll find it.
Yeah, it's a book. It's mostly about screenwriting. And I guess a whole series of Save the Cat books came from this one. But it's just about storytelling. I found these books are really helping. I read one recently called The Secrets of Story by Matt Bird. Kind of read and reread that one. I've also been reading Making Comics by Scott McCloud. I'm kind of really trying to get into the nuts and bolts of how stories work and how I can take this story I'm working on and make it as good as it can be.
Yeah, that sounds great. Is there, is the graphic novel still sort of a secret, or can you tell us about that at all?
Yeah, I can tell you about it. I think there was a Publishers Weekly announcement recently. Yeah, it's a story I originally was thinking of as a picture book, and it just kind of started morphing into this other thing. And I pitched the idea to Candlewick that we could do it as a graphic novel, and they said I could do it, so I'm doing it. It's a story. It's based on a true story, and it's about a girls' high school basketball team in Indiana in the 1970s. And it's in 1976, which is the first year that Indiana held a statewide tournament for girls. The movie Hoosiers is based on the big Indiana basketball boys tournament. So this is sort of the first year that they had that tournament for girls. And it's about that first team that won the tournament.
Oh, that sounds great. I will I will look out for that one. Is there a pub date yet for that, or is it too soon?
Yeah, well, I guess it's going to be fall 2022.
Awesome.
Right now it is a script and a few sketches, so it feels like a mountain to climb, but I'm excited to do it.
Yeah, I'll be excited to read it. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, and I definitely hope people go out and look for Ben of All Trades and your other books. I'll link to those in the show notes. And if people want to connect with you and follow you online, where should they head?
I'm pretty sure I'm Tavares Books on all social media that I'm on. So Twitter, it's at Tavares Books, or Facebook, you can search Tavares Books, or Instagram. Or just TavaresBooks.com is my website.
Great. Well, Matt Tavares, thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy visiting school, so I appreciate you making the time to chat with me. And good luck on the rest of your book tour.
Thanks for having me. It was very nice talking with you.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head over to the show notes at abookishhome.com, and there you'll also find plenty of other great book recommendations and ideas for building a culture of reading with your family. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe and rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you get a moment, it would be so helpful if you could share this episode on social media, or if you have picked up a book that I've recommended on the blog or podcast, please let me know. You can tag me at A Bookish Home. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.